Welcome to The Grill Room. On the menu this week, all the latest news, views, and opinions from the world of professional golf. Your maitre d's are Bob Bubka and Alex Maselli, two friends who rarely agree on anything. You can count on them to give you both sides of the story, whether you want it or not. Remember, keep your applause to a mild clap, all right? After all, we're talking golf here.
It's traveling time again. I'm Bob Bubka here in the Hamptons, getting a little R&R while Alex Maselli, somewhere in Europe, I think he's made his way to Scotland. And if I know Alex, if he's made his way to Scotland, he's played a round of golf at St. Andrews.
Yes, actually. Old course one day and Crail the next day. So, yeah, I mean, if I'm here, I better be playing golf.
Alex, for those, you know, that are listening, that truly love this sport and you know, for one reason or another, have never gotten the opportunity to play at St. Andrews, can you help them out a little bit? Can you paint a little picture? Can you describe your emotions? You know, I mean, it's such a fabulous place. But let's see if you can do a job of making them miss it even more.
Well, I mean, I can't do justice to 400 plus years of starting with old Tom Morris and going from there. But what I can say is, you know, if there's one place in the world that means golf, it's St. Andrews. And I mean, I'm not even sure, you know, how you correlate to other sports. I mean, I guess if it was the Indy 500 and you were sitting, if you were getting in a car and you were going on the track at the Indy 500, it would be in the same scenario. You know, just thinking about the fact that you're teeing off where, you know, a course that old Tom Morris laid out, that he played, that every champion you can ever think of played, the exact same place you're playing, the same grass, the same greens, everything is the same. There's nothing different. And that's what you're getting. And, you know, coming down the 18th and seeing the whole facade of St. Andrews, I mean, there's really, I don't know what you can say, not much really, except for that it is the best experience for an amateur in golf, period.
Do you think your feet are actually on Swoken Bridge as you cross it to walk up that 18th fairway, or are you on air?
No, I mean, I think that if you're doing the first time, it's kind of crazy. It's just, you know, everything is kind of sped up. When you're done, you just can't believe that you're done. I mean, it's just like that. It's just a great experience.
Well, speaking of great experiences, let's move on to what happened on the PGA Tour at the Bridgestone Invitational. Dustin Johnson, fresh off his U.S. Open victory, probably the favorite coming in, certainly played well. But one topic I want to talk to you about, because I know you were at the French Open, Shane Lowry chose to defend his title at Bridgestone rather than play in the European Tour event, which was the 100th anniversary of the French Open. Do you agree with what Shane did?
Yeah, I do. And actually, to a man, the players in France agreed as well. They understood that he was defending his title. So they had no problem with Shane not coming to France. So I don't have any issue with that at all. Obviously, the defense wasn't very successful. On the Dustin Johnson topic, though, it's rather interesting that he now has put two big events in a row. And, you know, let's be honest, he didn't start out that well. And now he's one win away in the short future, one win away of being the number one player in the world.
And, you know, it's amazing, all of the discussions over the last few months, he wasn't even mentioned in it. You know, it was the big three. It was Day, McIlroy, and Spieth. No mention of Dustin Johnson, but that certainly has changed. Let's listen, Alex, as Dustin Johnson describes his emotions after that big victory.
I mean, it's nice. It's the first time I won, you know, two tournaments in a row. I know it wasn't like two consecutive tournaments, but consecutive tournaments that I played. So, I mean, that's big. And I felt like this week, you know, definitely drove it better than I have in years past. And, you know, around this golf course, it's very important to drive it well. You know, the fairways are narrow, rough, steep. You know, it's like this every year. So just the driver was definitely the biggest improvement. You know, tee to green, I've been really solid all year. You know, my wedges have improved a lot. You know, I'm hitting, getting a lot more opportunities when I'm in the fairway and I hit it. You know, I'm hitting my wedges closer than I have been. So, yeah, I mean, I feel like the work I've put in with the putter is finally paying off. But, you know, I mean, it still comes down to you got to hit the shots so you can have those putts. But, yeah, I mean, it's been better. And, you know, I feel like, you know, one thing I've got a lot of confidence in is the driver for sure. It's, you know, I'm hitting a lot of fairways, but when I miss the fairways, it's not, you know, it's just barely misses, which is good.
Well, Alex, certainly you could hear the joy in the voice of Dustin Johnson and working hard on his putting. And really, as you alluded to, Alex, he's on the road to number one in the world, currently number two. It seems to be coming out of left field. I mean, he had been lurking. He couldn't get the job done in majors. The mishap at Whistling Straits, his poor performance at Pebble Beach, that all seems to be behind him. And look who's at the helm of the coaching ranks, none other than Butch Harmon. I got to believe Butch is making a big difference in the play of Dustin Johnson.
Well, I mean, Butch has always made a big difference in the people he worked with. I mean, when he first got Phil Mickelson, how much he changed what Phil's done. You know, he started working Ricky Fowler, that worked for Ricky. I will say that in Dustin Johnson's case, he clearly has it now somewhat figured out. He certainly seems to be in a better place emotionally and mentally. Changing, making an adjustment on how he's going to hit the driver, who he's always had a huge advantage with the club to begin with. So now learning how to put it in the fairway. And by the way, a cut is something that most of the best players in the world prefer versus a draw, because you can control a cut. Or so they say, Bob, I think it's, you can talk to a draw, you can't talk to a fade. Right, into a, I completely
the other way around.
Thank you very much. But you know what I'm talking about. And that's the bottom line. I mean, you have to be able to control the golf ball and these courses that these guys play. And when you're Dustin Johnson, when you're hitting it, you know, 330 yards, yeah, most holes you probably don't have more than a 9-iron or a wedge in.
Yeah, it was amazing at Firestone. One drive, 378 yards. I mean, it's just ridiculous what DJ's doing at the moment. But you alluded to it. He is number two in the world, but that's not where he wants to be.
The goal is to get to that number one spot. But, it's important. And, you know, still got a lot of work to do to get there. And, you know, it's not just getting there. You want to stay there. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to the challenge.
Well, Alex, he certainly has been lurking. You know, he's won at least one event every year since 2008. He now has 11 victories. He has a major championship. Literally, he's, you know, knocking on the door to gain Hall of Fame status.
Well, let's say one thing at a time first, okay? I mean, he's in the prime of his career. I'm not going to talk about the Hall of Fame. What I'd like to talk about is where he can go from here. I think there's no question, you know, the world rankings are always behind. They're not predictive. They're result-oriented. So right now, if you look at Dustin Johnson, he's clearly the best player in the world. He is playing as the best player in the world, and it's possible the world rankings will catch up to that in a short period of time. The question now is what can he do with the game that he has? Does he continue to follow up with that, or does he fall backwards a little? Jordan Spieth, great 2015, not a bad 2016 with two wins, but yet he's really fallen off to where he was in 15. Jason Day, he's certainly pretty close to in comparison to where he was in 15, but hasn't won a major, and I'm sure that's something that he's focused on. So we need to see where Dustin Johnson goes, but there's no question he can get better than he is right now. The question is, will he get better?
Well, he's certainly putting in the hard work, and he's got his eyes on a big prize that be coming up in just 2 weeks. And here's what Dustin Johnson had to say about playing at Royal Troon.
I'm excited and looking forward to going over to the British, you know, with the golf game in good form. I like the kind of golf over there. I enjoy it. You got to use a lot of imagination, you know, so, you know, generally windy. You got to use the greens, the ground, and you got to use the wind. You got to use everything to get the ball close to the hole. I mean, it's completely different than what we do here. And, I don't know. Ever since the first time I ever went over there, I've always enjoyed it. And I feel like I play pretty well over there. You can run the ball up on the green on every hole pretty much. So that's the big difference.
What's your plan in terms?
All right, let's move on, Alex, now to the Barracuda Championship. Certainly a surprise winner on top of that. It was none other than 42-year-old Australian Greg Chalmers. He's been around for a long time. How about that, Alex? 386 PGA Tour starts, and he finally gets his first victory. Boy, that's perseverance.
Well, I mean, he's one of those guys. He's a journeyman out here. I mean, he's made a living out here, but it was a different situation as we talked about. This is a modified Stableford. It's not a stroke play event per se. Gets into the Open Championship because of this. You know, big win for him. As you said, 386 chances, finally gets it done. He's certainly not the only guy that feels that way. But the bottom line is he did get it done, gets him in the Open Championship, which is huge. And, you know, everything else except for getting in the Masters, everything else he gets for the win. He gets 2-year exemption. He's going to go ahead and play, you know, in the Tournament of Champions in Hawaii. He's going to get in other events now because of this. So big win for Greg Chalmers.
And he tells us in no uncertain terms how he feels about it.
It was just a matter of time. I would have hoped it wasn't 386 events. But it's hard. It's hard to win. I'm very thrilled and very pleased to get it done this week. I knew today would be difficult. But, to come down the last and have a 7-iron into a par 5, knowing that you've only got to make par, it was a nice feeling. I was very happy.
Good job by Greg Chalmers. Speaking of a good job, and we're going to get a first-hand report on it, I think the European Tour did an excellent job of putting on the 100th playing of the French Open. You were there, Alex. You agree?
I do agree. I mean, obviously, as we talked about, most of the European players that meant anything were in France. They've made some changes to the golf course with the thoughts of the 2018 Ryder Cup. So everybody was pretty happy with the changes and the way the course played. The only difference was it was a little soft. So I think guys like Graham McDowell, who had won there twice, had some difficulties because it wasn't playing hard and fast, missed the cut. But Tung Jai Jai had no problems with the golf course. His 8th European Tour victory, big win, 4-shot victory over Francesco Molinari of Italy. And I think what you found there is that, A, you wouldn't think Jai Jai would be the winner because it was a pretty solid field, as I mentioned. But B, he took control of that tournament in the middle of the third round and never let go. Big, big second place finisher from Molinari because of the fact that the European Tour wanted to make an emphasis on how big this event was. They gave it double Ryder Cup points. That means Molinari got double Ryder Cup points for finishing second. Rory McIlroy finished third. And I will say that I think his game is really pretty close to being where he wants it to be. Just a couple changes he needs to make. He's not gonna fall away from like some of the other guys and take this week off. He's playing in Scotland, and then he's at the Scottish Open, and then he's going to play at Troon. So I think McIlroy's got another probably 4 rounds to kind of get everything ready for their Open Championship.
Well, certainly congratulations once again to the European Tour on the job they did. Let's switch gears, Mr. Maselli. Let's go to the LPGA Tour. And somebody is making a lot of noise out there. Canadian teenage sensation Brooke Henderson successfully defended her title at the Cumbria-Portland Classic presented by JTBC. She's 18 years old. What's going on? First we had Lydia Ko, and now we got Brooke Henderson. It's just amazing stuff.
Absolutely, Bob. Another 18-year-old. These teenagers are really changing the face of the LPGA Tour, and I'm not really sure where it stops because it seems to be this flood. Stacey Lewis is 4 shots back. Stacey Lewis and almost every American, with the exception probably of Lexi Thompson, have been MIA in 2016 on the LPGA Tour.
When we say that Brooke Henderson joins the likes of Annika Sorenstam and Kathy Whitworth, two of the greatest names ever to play the game, they're the only ones that also were back-to-back winners in Portland. That's pretty exclusive company.
It's definitely exclusive company. Now the women go off to the U.S. Women's Open, not too far away at Cordoval in San Martin, California. The Grill Room is proud to be entertaining the active men and women in the military, both at home and around the world, as part of the Armed Forces Radio Network. You're listening to The Grill Room, powered by GolfWeek.com, heard on TuneIn Radio, the Armed Forces Radio Network, and, of course, TalkSport 2, part of the world's largest sports radio station. You can also find us at Twitter, @PGR Golf, and on Facebook @The Grill Room Golf Show.
And after the break, Alex, we're going to take a look at some news and notes and, of course, the increasingly hot topic, the Olympics.
You're listening to The Grill Room.
The Grill Room is thrilled to support the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America and all superintendents doing great work for the game we all love. In fact, we call them the unsung heroes in golf. Here's what two-time major winner Jordan Spieth has to say.
If you love golf like I do, you'll thank your golf course superintendent.
A message from the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America and local superintendents everywhere.
Hi, I'm Ernie Els. Autism is not game over, it is game on. Get educated and learn the facts. Please learn the early warning signs on our website, elsforautism.com, and talk to your doctor about an autism screening if you have any concerns.
Golfin, the innovative award-winning clubs of choice for parents eager to see their kids fall in love with golf. In fact, let's let Callum McPherson, founder and managing director of Golfin, explain how Golfin GFK clubs take the young golfer from beginner to winner.
So our clubs, our golf clubs, are designed and manufactured, as you know, Bob, to make the game easier for kids so that we build confidence and they have fun from the very, very beginning. So we then kind of thought, well, what else can we do to enhance the enjoyment factor and the fun factor for the kids? And we kind of thought, well, what about golf balls? So what we've developed is easy-to-hit golf balls. So we've got a 60mm golf ball. Basically, it's about twice the size of a normal golf ball. Other sports like soccer and rugby, the balls are scaled to the age of the kids. So we're just applying common sense to make it easier for the kids to hit the ball, and these things just pop right up in the air. They're light, they're safe, and they're easy to hit.
Visit golfin.com, that's golphin.com, to find out more and how to order your kids the gift of golf right now.
Welcome back to the Grill Room. Your table's ready. Now here's Bob Bubka and Alex Maselli.
Alex loves news and notes, so let's get right to it. Let's begin with Nike Golf. They seem to be in a post-Tiger slump. Tiger not as visible. Nike Golf now has reported sales that have plunged 8% for the fiscal year that ended May 31st. Evidently, Alex, when you read into this a little bit, Rory McIlroy lacks that star power that Tiger commanded.
Well, I mean, that might be true. Is there anybody actually that played golf that has the star power now that Tiger had? Probably not. But I think you have to add into the equation that Under Armour is taking some of that business, at least from the soft goods side. And I think on the hard goods side, if there was any business there with Nike, they're probably losing it to places like Titleist and losing it to Callaway, losing it to TaylorMade. So, I mean, you know, 8% is easily found on the golf side. It was never a big part of their business to begin with. I mean, in general, over the Nike corporate. But, you know, obviously, if you relied on Tiger, it's not doing much for you right now.
And if you take a wide angle look at golf, Alex, and certainly you have the pulse of, you know, not only the radio but the print side. Do golf stores really make that much a difference in sales?
Well, I will say this. I think to some extent they do, but the problem is when was the last time, Bob, you ran out and bought a club or a pair of shoes or a glove or a hat or a jacket or a shirt because a player was wearing it or using it?
I wouldn't fall into that category, but, you know, when you look at golf events on TV, you see a lot of people wearing, the clothing and hats and whatnot of their favorite players. So, and apparently with the manufacturers throwing that big money around, it certainly has an influence. It's a question of how big that influence is. Speaking of influence, how about the membership at Royal Troon? They now voted to admit women members.
Before I get to the Royal Troon thing, I want to say one other thing. The only person that drives the needle on clothing sales that I can determine is Ricky Fowler. That is it. So you take everybody else out there, Ricky Fowler is the only one that drives sales. And if you think about what you were saying about what you see kids and people and fans out there, how many times do you see people wearing Ricky stuff?
He certainly generates a lot of sales, because even though I'm not particularly fond of his modern 2016 look with those pants being tucked in and whatnot, you see more and more of it. So far be it from me to comment on fashion. I would be the last thing, I'd be the last one actually to be ever called a fashion plate. Now let's move on to Royal Troon, Alex. The membership there, they voted to admit women members, probably expected, and I think it's the right move.
Well, everybody thinks it's the right move, but you know, when you're over here with Brexit and Muirfield from before, you never know what's really going to happen. But thankfully, this seemed to go the course it was supposed to. And it'll take away from having to have this discussion now at the Open Championship next week.
And that's probably the main beneficiary of the fact that they did make that change. Seems like the Muirfield membership, Alex, wants to have another vote so they can repair the damage they sustained to their reputation when they voted not to allow women members.
Yeah, let's hope that they've learned their lesson, because the last time round was just a disaster for them.
Well, final preparation for the Open Championship coming up next week at Royal Troon is going to be at the Aberdeen Asset Management Scottish Open at Castle Stewart. I know you're there, Alex. Give us a little, paint a little picture, I should say, of what Castle Stewart is like.
Well, it's not exactly the traditional links-style course, Bob, but Gil Hands did a very nice job here. I think weather is going to be the issue not only this week, but probably next week as well at Troon. So the guys that are playing this week, if it doesn't get crazy windy, they're going to probably have a bit of an advantage going into the next week because of the fact that they're going to have played in this for 1 week. You got Phil Mickelson, you got Luke Donald, you got Patrick Reed, McDowell, Martin Keimer, Russell Knox came over, Henrik Stenson, even Steve Stricker is here. So it's a pretty good field. And I think we're gonna walk out of here with clearly a new winner, since Ricky Fowler did not come back to defend, which I don't really understand what that's all about. But the bottom line is that this is going to be a good test for these guys, and it's going to be, I think, a bit of a benefit going into next week.
Well, I was just going to touch on that, Alex. I feel very strongly that, you know, in order to give yourself the best chance at winning the Open Championship, I think you're almost compelled to go participate in the Scottish Open, not only get acclimated to the time, but the type of golf that's played over there, so that you don't show up at Royal Troon and you know, you're in a big learning curve early in the week. If you played the week before in the Scottish Open, you breeze right into Royal Troon, and probably, in my opinion at least, enhances your chances of winning.
Yeah, I think it's beneficial, but if you talk to Jordan Spieth, he would talk about the fact that not only did he play well at St. Andrews last year after playing at John Deere, but the winner last year at St. Andrews, Zach Johnson, also played at the John Deere. So there are people that will make the opposite argument, but I think what you said was that they have the best chance. I'm not going to disagree with you, but I think everybody is different in how they prepare for these events.
You know, Jack Nicklaus like to take a week off before the majors. Others like to play a week before the majors. Everybody finds their own rhythm, and they try and stick to it. And if you're not successful, then the best play is to change that rhythm. Rhythm is not going the way of the Olympics so far. The Olympic countdown is now upon us. Some Olympic trials are still underway. Most sports have named their Olympic teams, but golf seems at this juncture to be in a little bit of a state of confusion.
Well, I mean, we're not in a state of confusion in regards to how we pick the team, because by the end of this week, once the Scottish Open is done, since there's no U.S. event this week, we'll pretty much, well, we will have at the deadline, which is July 11th, we will have what the 60 guys that are in the field at least are made the field. I think what your question is how many of those 60 guys are going to show up? We already know that we have, McIlroy, McDowell, Lowry, Scott, Jason Day, Leishman, Oosthuizen, Grace, Schwartzel, Vijay Singh, and Hideki Matsuyama, who were in, are out. Tim Wilkinson was, I think he may have been in, he's out. And then on the LPGA side, you have Leanne Pace. I don't think this number is stopped yet. I think we're going to see some more defections, but we will know who the players are supposed to be in the field at the end of Sunday night.
Yeah, two big names as far as the Olympics are concerned that seem to be waffling just a little bit. At least that's the scuttlebutt. Jordan Spieth, Ricky Fowler, you know, once 3 months ago, 4 months ago, were, you know, all hyped up about it. Now they seem to be reevaluating. It's going to be a big blow to Olympic golf, and it has already been a big blow with the number of big names, as you just rattled off, Alex, that are not going to go. But when you think of Rio, I just read a report just yesterday. You know, the crime rate is high, a lot of violence going on. You know, there's some pollution in the water. You know, ticket sales are down. And then probably the hardest thing to understand, the president of the country is in the middle of an impeachment process. I mean, it doesn't seem like the ideal place you want to go.
No. And of course, you didn't even mention the Zika issue, which may not be much of an issue, but it is the reason many players are suggesting they're not going, which, look, if you don't want to be there, you shouldn't be there. I think that's pretty much the bottom line. And unlike every other sport where the Olympics is the pinnacle, for golf, it's not even the top four. So you can clearly understand why they're not going. Bob, so put all the defections aside. What do you think the International Golf Federation, the IGF, can do going into Tokyo to make these players want to participate?
You know, that's a really good question. And I don't, you know, the answer that I feel, you know, the best of my mental ability, I don't think there's anything you can do to make them want to go play in the, you know, compete in the Olympics. I think you just said it a minute ago, Alex, that, you know, if you want to go, then, you know, you're going to go. If you don't want to go, you don't want to go. It's funny, I go for coffee in the morning and I run into a girl that's from Brazil and from Rio, and she scoffs at the Zika virus. She says it's all wintertime down there. There are no mosquitoes. So, you know, is Tokyo more attractive? I would say on the surface, yes. But we'll have to wait and see. I mean, you know, the thing that fascinates me, Alex, is the fact that, you know, everybody says, well, you got to go to the Olympics because, you know, winning that gold medal. Well, only one person's going to win the gold medal. Everybody else is not going to win a gold medal.
Yeah, the only thing I will say, Bob, is I think the format is flawed. A lot of players have talked about that. I don't know if that would have changed the Rio situation, but I think if we're going to make, if golf is going to stay in the Olympics, and I'm assuming it will, if golf is going to stay in the Olympics, you need to make it compelling. You need to make it a reason why players will change their schedules to play in the Olympics versus now just discounting playing in the Olympics. And I think that's the biggest challenge that the IGF has. And they need to sit down and figure that out, because so far they've done a very, very poor job.
Next week, it's the Open Championship, our favorite major of the year. Our Open Championship preview show will be coming to you directly from Royal Troon on Wednesday. Who's going to take home the claret jug this year? Alex and I will make our picks. I know I picked the winner of the U.S. Open. Can I make it two in a row? A lot of pressure, but I'm going to give it my best shot. Well, will Alex make the winning pick? We'll find out soon enough. Royal Troon, here we come.
That's it for this week. You've been listening to The Grill Room, heard on TuneIn, the Armed Forces Radio Network, and, of course, TalkSport 2.
A big thank you to our partners, the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America, to Golfin, innovative clubs for all ages, beginners to winners, that's their goal, and to GolfWeek.com. So for Janice Self, our executive producer, Alex Maselli, and myself, Bob Bubka, a thank you for being part of our Grill Room family. Please, why not follow us on Twitter at TGR Golf, and you can like us on Facebook at The Grill Room Golf Show.
Thanks for spending some time in The Grill Room. No need to leave a tip. Just come back again next week. The Grill Room.